And with that, counsel, I'll ask you to stand right where you are. Give us your names and the parties you represent so that we can start the official record.
Gordon Smith for the appellees.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Benjamin Leone for Acadian Sea Plants, the appellant.
Thank you, Mr. Leone.
Catherine Connors for the Maine Department of Marine Resources.
Thank you, Ms. Connors. And with that, Mr. Leone.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Ben Leone, and I represent Acadian Sea Plants. We ask this court today to declare that the public has a right to harvest rockweed from the intertidal zone and to deny the plaintiff's unprecedented request to privatize a living marine organism found in intertidal waters. Today I want to focus on three reasons why. First, a broad and sympathetically generous interpretation which this court must apply to the verbs fishing and navigation incorporate what a plurality of this court in McGarvey characterized as the public's right to, quote, obtain sustenance or economic benefits through the harvesting of the sea, which is, of course, precisely what Acadian Sea Plants does. To this day, Maine's economy and working waterfront depends on the public's longstanding right to engage in the backbreaking work of harvesting living marine organisms such as mussels, oysters, marine worms, fish, clams, the living resources of the sea. And this court has steadfastly protected that public interest by recognizing that the state owns intertidal waters and the living marine resources attached to or embedded in private intertidal land, and that the public has a right to cross intertidal land and extract those living marine resources from private intertidal land. In sum, continuing to protect the public's right to harvest living seaweed in the intertidal zone is consistent with this court's precedent. Second, plaintiffs rely heavily on a case called Hill versus Lord from the 1860s, but acknowledge on page 22 of their brief that Hill never considered the public rights to harvest seaweed pursuant to the public trust doctrine, the doctrine that Acadian presents here. Hill was instead premised on case law related to title by prescription and accretion. And finally, the terrestrial distinction between public wild transient animals such as deer and private stationary products of the land does not apply to the oceans or intertidal zone and never has, which has abundant populations of stationary non-transient marine organisms that are undeniably public property. And unlike a terrestrial plant, such as a tree, seaweed is not the product of the land. It's a product of the ocean, which is a public resource. Acadian therefore respectfully requests that this court reaffirm the public's right to do what it has been doing since colonial times, which is harvest living seaweed, a marine resource, from the intertidal zone. With that, I waive whatever time I have left, and I'm happy to answer the court's questions.
Mr. Leone, this case will call upon the court once again to visit the parameters of the public's access to that intertidal zone. The parties and the amici have done a wonderful job showing us where those parameters have been drawn previously. In this case, are we looking at the distinction between plants and animals, or the distinction between permanent versus occasionally moving upon the waters? What is, in your mind, the line that is drawn that puts this kind of seaweed on the public side of the line?
Right. Thank you for that question. I think it's critically important that there is a line drawn somewhere, and that line is drawn between living marine organisms found in intertidal waters and those marine organisms or the land that may have been washed ashore. You know, there is a balancing here that needs to happen between living marine organisms, which are subject to the public right to harvest, and the doctrine of accretion. And where that line can easily be drawn is when marine resources die, and where the court has drawn it in the past, where marine resources die or are cast upon the land so that they could contribute to an alluvial addition to land, it becomes private. But until that point, It's a public resource, and the public has the right to harvest it.
But this resource you talk about, sort of accreting the land, adding to the land, the latest science, to the extent it's respected, indicates the reverse is happening, that the water is gaining and the amount of shoreline is or the amount of land on the shore, on the borders, is declining. So you're saying that basically if you're successful, people can harvest, you know, closer and closer and closer to people's homes and other properties on the shore. Is that right?
Well, the common law has always recognized a moving property line along the intertidal zone and at the high water mark. Doesn't matter what state.
And with global warming, we now know that is sort of adding to the sea and detracting from the land, correct?
It appears that sea level is rising, and if seaweed is detached from the bottom of the ocean.
But your argument would go to any living organism, any kind of plant, any kind of grass or whatever, could be harvested by anybody once it's below the generally recognized high water mark.
If it's below the high water mark,
no matter what it is, grass, seaweed, trees, whatever, could be harvested.
Could
right?
be eelgrass, could mm-hmm. be seaweed.
Mr. Leone, some of the amici have suggested that we should consider policy in making this decision and are concerned that the Department of Marine Resources has been doing a less than adequate job in regulating this new way of fishing, if you will, in Maine. And we have been, it has been argued to us that the tragedy of the commons should play some role in our decision making here. Should we be concerned that the government, which has undertaken the obligation to regulate this, has not done a spectacular job with other fisheries in Maine?
Well, I think in this case, outside of other fisheries in Maine, the record is pretty clear that the government's doing a very good job regulating the harvest of the seaweed. But to your point, we don't draw distinctions in property ownership based on concerns about whether a particular agency is adequately regulating a particular activity.
And the agency has been very clear that it will regulate as it should, as good government, but those regulations do not decide who owns the property at issue.
The regulations themselves do not. What they do provide, which is telling, is that they provide definitions of what's considered a marine organism. They provide definitions for what's considered fishing. And that's important when you go back and review this court's decision in McGarvey, where even Justice Levy, in his plurality opinion, acknowledged that those core requirements of delineating the public's right pursuant to fishing and fowling and navigation, those terms should be recognized and evolve as they evolve over time. And so regardless of what fishing and fowling and navigation may have meant back in, 1641 to 47, the fact is, times change, things evolve, and the Department of Marine Resources recognizes that harvesting seaweed is a form of fishing, and they have for decades.
Mr. Leone, let me ask you, if I could, just to follow up on the Chief's question about what kind of dividing line we need to be identifying. It seems to me there are a couple different components in this case. There's the effect of the Hill case, but then there's also the colonial ordinance issue. Isn't it true that the nature of the dividing line really differs between the issues that we need to address? In the Hill case, the question is whether the asset, the resource, is a profit in the soil, and that's a legal term that we need to apply to a natural resource that may not be susceptible to a clean delineation along those lines. But then as far as the colonial ordinance and public trust doctrine is concerned, we may be looking at a very different concept. There we're looking at fishing, fowling, navigation, and the dividing line may be different there than it is with the Hill profit or prandra analysis. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think this case falls squarely into the jurisprudence related to the public trust doctrine and what types of resources and what rights the public has to obtain sustenance and economic benefits through the harvesting of the sea. Profit of prandras, which often apply to upland, in this case I view it as a bit of a red herring, because we acknowledge that giving in a deed somebody the right to use your land for hunting is a profit a prandra. We characterize it as a profit a prandra. Yet deer themselves are public property. So regardless of how this court views profit a prandra, you know, this is an area of law that's distinct and really should not be decided on whether this is could be characterized as a profit a prandra or not.
But the problem continues with the definition of fishing, which is almost what brings us here. I would suggest to you that it's pretty clear that clams and mussels and oysters are available to the public. If, however, I bring a backhoe to the intertidal zone and begin to scoop out large parts of that intertidal zone, then there's going to be a problem because the public rights will interfere with the private rights. So the question here, and I don't think Hill gives us much of an answer, is what do we do with rockweed that actually attaches to the rocks in the intertidal zone? Does it make it different? The Hill Court was thinking about the seaweed many of us know that floats and actually goes away. Does that make a difference in our analysis here?
Well, I think it's a reason why Hill versus Lohr doesn't apply in this case. But
although Hill does say that the seaweed belongs to the owner of the soil upon which it grows. We're not talking about seaweed that's floating loose in the ocean. We're talking about seaweed that's attached.
But the court goes on to say the defendant admits at the end of that statement. You know, they're reciting what the defendant admits because what the defendant needed in that case in Hill, they needed a right to cross somebody's private property, their farm, to get to the shore to take seaweed. The public trust doctrine wouldn't have helped the defendants in that case because they still needed a right to get over private land to extract that resource. So they brought claims of title by prescription and easement by custom. And in doing that, they needed to concede, or you know, it really didn't matter to them whether they conceded that the seaweed belongs to the owner of the soil because they were claiming
Your view essentially is that anything that's below the high water mark, perhaps even with the chief's example, can be harvested or taken or collected, correct?
No.
No? Okay, what's the exception?
Yeah, if it's a living marine resource, it can be harvested. Where this court has drawn a line is where those marine resources die. For example, mussel shells.
But even a living marine resource that's on someone's property, correct?
That's
below the high water mark, but on someone's property.
Yes.
Do you argue then that lobsters can be fished out of lobster ponds that are separated by a net by anybody else who happens along?
Well, those have been reduced to possession. And early cases dealing with the public trust doctrine talk about your private right to erect fish weirs.
So if you put a net out on the out beyond the seaweed, you can't mm-hmm. harvest that?
You wouldn't be able to harvest that. DMR might have something to say about you putting nets in the intertidal zone.
Is there a difference between a plant that grows from the sea bottom as opposed to a plant that's attached to a rock?
There's a physical difference, but there's no difference in how the law should be viewing it. It's a living marine organism. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leone. Ms. Connors.